sure he had pink knickers on at some stage.
Hey, I've got proof that you had them on. I've still got the proof.
You didn't have to bend his elbow too hard to get him to wear the pink knickers.
I beg your pardon.
Gaffers are never on the losing team, are they? So you know yeah. He's fibbing.
Yeah, exactly.
I cannot wait for this. I got proof.
I think we're rolling.
We are rolling.
He said we're rolling, yeah.
Yeah, do you want to do a sponsor?
Can you hear me? Yeah, all right, let's get into it then. Give me 2 secs.
Oh my goodness. Sure.
Okay, today's show is brought to you by OMRG Motors, the vehicle sourcing specialist. Save thousands on your next car purchase with competitive APR rates as low as 9.8%. OMRG Motors are unrivaled by most main dealers. I repeat, most main dealers cannot match their rates. OMRG Motors has a broad lending panel that covers prime to subprime lenders. All that means is that even if your credit is poor as, they still just might be able to help you. If your credit score is lower than your IQ, luckily, there's not much to think about. Get in touch. They might still be able to help you. If you've had more CCJs than BJs in your life, get in touch. They might still be able to help you. If you thought good credit was buying a £50 top-up on your pay-as-you-go, then you need to get in touch because OMRG Motors just might be able to get you approved for that motor you've always wanted. They're so confident in their rates that if you find a lower APR elsewhere, they'll match the savings and sort you £250 in cash. Use discount code ONELEAGUE to get £100 cash back on your next car purchase. Rates so low, it'll make you say OMFG. Socials are OMRG Motors and website is allthews.omrgmotors.co.uk. Now let's start the show. Are you going to rate me or?
You're getting better.
Consistency.
No. You're good. Building.
Consistency.
9.
Very good. I mean, soon, there's not going to be anywhere else to go.
No, you're getting a 9.
That's close to 10. I mean, that's, you know, that was good.
It was good.
Yeah, see, he's always harsher, you know, harsher to me than the guests.
What do you say?
No, I'd say it was close to 10.
There you go. Yeah, at 9.5.
Yeah.
At least. Round it. You know your maths. You round it to the nearest holder.
Yeah, but he didn't say 9. He said 9.
Round it up.
You might have said 9.25.
Yeah,
never down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, One League, episode, I want to say 12.
It's 12.
Episode 12.
Yeah.
Happy to have Gary McCann here.
Happy to be here, Cal.
No, thank you for coming.
Disclaimer before we get rolling. I don't know why we're wearing the same colour tracksuit. This guy... Hey, Kel told me to wear this colour tracksuit. He wanted it to be matched with me. That's all I'm saying.
It's just missing the football badge. It's the club issue.
One league club colours.
Fair enough.
Yeah, no, Gary, man. Wait, I don't even know where to start with you, man. It's been a long journey.
It's been a long journey. All right, usually, we start the show with something called Wikipedia. We ain't believing you.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you're a manager, so for certain reasons, there's not such Wikipedia, but there is a lot of information out there. Mm-hmm. Now, the information I found, first and foremost, was that you have managed 3 clubs. Is that correct?
It is, yeah. On my 3rd club now, yeah.
On your 3rd...
Yeah, only the 3 over a long period as well. Which is it's unheard of, really, in management, isn't it?
This is it.
Yeah,
we're going to get onto that. So there was a bit of a discrepancy between the order of the clubs because I thought it was Richmond.
Hampton and Richmond.
Hampton and Richmond.
Mm-hmm.
And then, what was the club after?
Hendon.
And then Billericay.
Yeah, no.
It was Hendon was the longer term. I'd played there for a period of time, so there was an affinity to that club, and I stayed there maybe a little longer than I should have. I had a sort of duty and a loyalty to the club that went a little bit beyond, it felt like, and location was perfect. Like, you've just shared with me where I live, so it was, you know, it was very close. But I had 12 years there as manager, 11, 12 years.
Interesting.
So
he actually said 13 years from what I read.
I might have been 12 and a half years, and we round up. We don't round
down. So what I think what I find most interesting about that is then, and maybe the reason I put it second instead of first is because already it's amazing that you were at a club for that long.
Mm-hmm.
But now, that's your first club you're at for that. So, new into management. How's that taking place, that you're new into management and then it's lasted so long?
Yeah, I mean, look, there was lots of opportunities on the way that I could have taken that, you know, I could have seen that term be a lot shorter than it was. A couple of years into my term, I had a couple of job offers. But there was a lot going on at the football club that I just felt duty bound. It just had a, you know, when I first took over, it was in a real precarious position. It was sitting right down the bottom. It was it'd been on a terrible run.
What league, may I ask?
It was in the Isthmian Premier, what we're playing in now. It was exactly the same league.
Yep.
And they've obviously moved across now to the Southern League. But at the time, it was the Ryman Premier, which is what we all know as the Ryman Premier.
Ryman Premier.
So that was the league we was in. But they were struggling at the time. I was called in, you know, I'd had a 7 years playing there and I'd still been in contact. I had a business at the time, a sports trade business, and I was still supplying them bits and pieces. So I was still in contact with them and the people, the powers to be, and they found themselves in a real poor position. I think they'd had one win in about 23 games and it was like they were looking like they were relegation bound. But
okay.
I wasn't sure I was ready. I was coaching my kids and such like, and took an interest in coaching and management, but didn't know I was ready for that, to jump straight from nothing to everything.
Well, that's interesting. All right, so 7 years playing,
mm-hmm.
and was there a gap between the playing and the supplying trades?
Yeah, there was. I mean, I picked up a knee injury at the age of 27. A serious knee injury that needed reconstructing.
Oh, right.
Never get back to the level that I felt was worthy. I think some might have played, but I was nursing myself through on a day-to-day, game-to-game training session basis, and it just got to the period about 2 years on from the operation that it just become apparent that there was no life in the dog, as they say.
Believe it or not,
it was that long ago, and this cow knows how mad I am about Chelsea. We actually, and I...
Too mad.
I had three boys at the time, and, I stepped away for the first time in 10 years since the kids were young, and, the commitment that's involved in playing, I stepped away, and I thought, I'm going to have some kid time, I'm going to have some family time. I bought Chelsea season tickets, which we still have to this day, 25 years on.
Oh, sorry about that.
Not hard. It's double tough this year, let me tell you.
Hey, the tweets have gone quiet this year, isn't it?
Yeah, they double quiet. We was at the cup final recently, and I kept away from you as well, So I had about 18 months away from playing. I sort of had that period out, started taking the kids to all the away games. We stayed overnight up north in different places, and the kids loved it. And then I got the phone call. And then it was, shan't I?
Okay.
If I don't get involved now, will I ever get back involved? It was that sort of stuff going through your mind. And I felt, again, a duty to the club. And I thought, can I realign it and get it back to... a position of safety. And I went in and, we didn't really look back. We had an unbelievable run of results, got ourselves sort of mid-table, and then it was, do I want to do it permanently?
Because
when most people go in from nothing to everything, you sort of see it as a period of a trial period. You go in, get to the end of the season, wife sort of see what is entailed, and and it was
all the hours
full on. When you get over the other side of the fence to management, it's relentless. It's not like playing. They drive out of training at 9 o'clock and that's them done until they turn up Saturday, and that's truly what it's like when you're playing. Your focus is game training, but you're not when you're in management. You're watching, you're assessing, you're analysing, it's just constant, and there's a constant run of bits to do. There's always something going on, there's always a problem, there's always a drama, there's always an issue of whatever it be. Your season finishes and it's your busiest period. It's
I can imagine. So can I ask you, you kind of touched upon there why you chose to accept it, but from the club's perspective, I'll ask you a question. Why do you think he looked at Gary McCann and thought, he's the right guy?
I asked that question, and I asked it at the people a little bit further down the line when I was about 2-3 years deep. For that exact reason. I'd had no experience, but what they'd seen in me, and it was the same people that what they'd seen in me as a player. I had a way with me that was, I enjoyed being around the football club to start with. I had an affinity towards the football club, but I also was very football minded. I was, I was interested in the tactics and the other side of it. And I used to speak to one or two. We'd go in the bar after and talk with chairman, secretaries and such like. And you'd pick the bones out of performances and such like. And obviously they're taking stock of you as an individual,
Yeah.
And
it, yeah.
And they obviously see something in myself because they'd found themselves, as I say, on a terrible run. The discipline was terrible. I think they'd had 11 red, something ridiculous about
it. Oh, it's all coming 11, out now.
Well, they'd had about 11 red cards. They'd had
in one season.
In one, it was only at Christmas time. This was January when I took over.
Discipline.
So it had been a discipline issue. The management had already had a change. They'd
so
gone
who
from
was
one,
the manager that you took over?
It was Tony Chules, who was the original manager, and then a guy called Fowl. First name now, that's terrible on my part, but he was the assistant to Tony Chules and he took over and they'd just gone on. Although, if I'm not mistaken, about 6-8 games in, they were sitting top. They'd started extremely well, Cal, which from that period, though, they just went on a run of results.
Yeah.
Similar to us at the Ricky at the moment. we've gone from up there and fallen, but we'll talk about that later. They'd just gone on a terrible run. They'd lost discipline. They'd lost, their identity. It was a family, community-based club. It was, respected club. And it had just lost its way. And they just felt they needed someone that had a fondness of the football club, that had an attachment to the football club.
Yeah,
like most clubs
back.
When, yeah, exactly, yeah. Bring the true values back
and
the identity to the football club. And they knew 7 years playing there and I'd experienced lots of FA Cup runs. We'd got to, FA Cup first rounds, I think in the 7 years, I think 5 of the 7 years.
Wow.
That's a big number.
That's crazy,
we got to the second
round.
I've
only done it twice.
Once as well. So we'd had a scalp in there. We'd beat Leighton Orient while I was at Hendon as well. So that was a big, big scalp.
What are those team talks like? FA Cup?
Oh, well, it's FA Cup. It's, it's the old sort of, big Mino against the big gun. And, and it's
David,
can you raise your
life.
Levels to the next plateau, the next stage? It's, it's all about motivating yourself and trying to better the bigger and better. It's that they've got to fall off as well.
Yeah.
They're at that level for a reason.
Yeah.
You don't beat them if they're at maximum.
That's a fact.
They've got to have a little drop off and take you lightly. I mean, what fired us with the Orient game, we had a fixture at home against them and we'd gone 1-0 up, 2-1 up, 2-1 up. Ended the game 2-2 and their manager Tommy Taylor at the time was doing an interview as we walked out. He's interviewing, there was two or three of the players out and he was saying they've had their chance, we'll beat them comfortably, and it was
all right.
But that had been relayed back to our manager and I remember it was clear as anything because it was like
dangling that carrot,
they'll beat us company. So is that their mindset? Are they going to take the game lightly? Are they, thinking that it's just going to be a stroll?
Yeah.
We went over there and we beat them 1-0 at Brisbane Road. So that was but that was me playing career. So I'd had a real affinity with a football club. A lot of good times had happened in them 7 years. So
I heard you were a goalkeeper.
I'd love
to know the kind of percentage of goalkeepers that
go into management.
Probably because obviously goalkeepers one of a few positions on the pitch.
Not many, I'd say. Yeah. Most goalkeepers are mad, aren't they?
I'm glad you said it.
Yeah, but there's a crazy side to them. But I have always, as I say, I've always had an attachment to the other side of the game. I was always interested and I related to the tactical side and I was interested in it, it was different bits that we speak about over, how you motivate and sports psychology and all them type of things interesting. It all related into, I suppose, where I'm now, but becoming a manager, I was into that sort of side of the game when I was playing, but I don't think many. There is some. Don't get me wrong. There's quite a few, but I don't think it's the percentage. I think would be very, very small.
Very low. What kind of keeper would you say you were?
I was good when I was back. I was like a modern day goalkeeper of now.
If you
took yourself back to when I was playing, you're talking 25, 30 years ago. But I was good with my feet. Yeah. I was comfortable. Stepping out, I was comfortable. I had distribution was something that was always on point. If it be out my hands, off the floor, I was always known for being, my distribution. But that's now a modern day goalkeeper. Go back there, it was a big, cumbersome old goalkeeper that was good on crosses, but was crap with his feet.
Because you got to remember when
I started playing, you could pick the ball up on a back pass.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It goes back that far.
Yeah.
But in my playing time, that changed. You know, it changed from being able to pick it up to then not allowed to pick a back pass up. So that I had to make that adaptation while I was playing.
While you were playing. And it wasn't a hard adaptation.
It wasn't a hard adaptation because I played it when I was a kid. Because we used to go to youth clubs as a kid in Labbot Grove. We had the rugby club, the Arrow Club, which were two clubs. We went every day of the week. And I didn't want to play and go every night. So I'd be playing out on field. I'd alternate. You know, as much as I was a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And I, when we played in all the tournaments and all the big games in West London and London, and I was a goalkeeper. But at any opportunity I had,
I wanted to be up, you know,
crunching into tackles and playing and, you know, getting the enjoyment of outfield stuff. Because if you're playing in a good team, goalkeepers are boring.
Yeah, you know, there's an old belief that most goalkeepers kind of get shoved in to go at first.
Well, I did. I had asthma. This is gospel truth, right? I had asthma. My mum wouldn't stop me playing football.
Oh,
I was about 7 or 8. I had an asthma attack as a young kid, like, you know, and I had to have a pump. And she was saying, "You're not running about on that football field. You go in goal if you're going to play."
That is how
I ended up in goal. But the asthma cure, because they say, didn't it, every 7 years, 7 years, 14 years, as I got to an age, it sort of, you know, I lost the asthma and I was then able to get about. But that was how I was. So I was pushed in goal. It was my mum. I love that. So that's where I ended up. But as I say, so with my feet, it was because I played sort of out on the field as much as I play. And I wasn't the biggest goalkeeper. I'm only 5'11". So, you know, I'm not your normal 6'2", 6'3", 6'4". And I mean, I was at Fulham from the age of 11. 10 or 11, right up to 19, 18. I hadn't even heard of non-league football when I started. They put me as a 16-year-old. They said I was too small for my YTS.
Okay.
They took on another goalkeeper that was about 5 or 6 inches taller than me.
Okay.
And they put me out at Sutton United. And I thought, who's Sutton United? Like now, it's like a football league club. Back in the day, I'd never even heard of them. So I went into Sutton as a 16-year-old and was playing youth team on a Wednesday night with Sutton United.
Okay.
But also, what happened, they didn't rate the goalkeeper that they'd signed as a YTS. I ended up playing, I'd say 30 games over the course of the 2 years in the YTS for Fulham. You know, Arsenal's and Tottenham.
Wait, hold on. So they didn't offer you the YTS?
Didn't offer me the YTS, but I still went in because it just suited me. And I used to bunk off of school to go train. You know, I went in and, you know, I used to train with the YTS. So I was like a second goalkeeper in the YTS group.
Got you.
Because they were all the players, you say, he's better than him, he should be playing. And it was, but he had, they would have played, I think, the other guy, but he picked up a few different injuries and different bits. And I ended up playing, you know, as many games as he did over the course of the two years.
That's a bit tough to take, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it was high.
They said, but that went, and this is gospel truth. When I left school at 15, 16, when they initially was offering YTS. Now it's slightly different. You have academy contracts for 3 years and it's all, you know, it was £27 a week. So it wasn't like you're missing out on much. Do you know? You got a YTS deal, it was 20, I think it was £27.
£27 a week.
You know, but I went off and got, I think it was when I got to 16, I went off and got a job, and I got a job in a local sports shop to fit around being able to train
with
a YTS as well. So it was sort of like, you know, and I sort of had football mindset and was training and playing and such like. But when I left school, I was only 5'6", 5'7". So I was small for a goalkeeper.
But then you've grown like four inches
in the space of 2 years. When I got to 18 and I was sort of you, I was, you know, 5'10", 5'11". And that's where I plateaued off. But you know, Sutton was where I sort of learnt non-league. They were a National League side at the time. And I played 2 years in the youth team there. And in my first year was I was only 18 because I was a young, so I was still only 18. I actually, and it's unheard of now, Cal, you'll relate to this, is I had about 11 National League games as an 18-year-old.
Wow, as an 18, that's massive. Wow.
We went to Northwich, Victoria, Macclesfield, Kidderminster's, Merthyr Tydfil at the time. I was only 18. You tell me now, National League, it don't tend to happen now.
Not with goalkeepers as well. No.
Keith Blunt and Ted Shepherd, the two guys. Keith Blunt was the old England manager. He was the Sutton manager at the time. He had no problem throwing kids in.
Yeah.
He obviously see something in me, but I ended up playing about 11 or 12 games in the National League as a baby.
That's massive, though.
Wow.
As a baby. And that was while I was at Sutton. From there, I sort of, Cal can relate to this because he's a bit like this. I chase the money from there.
He always says that. He always says that.
Everyone is a money grabber.
He's all about papers. He's, you know, always.
Nah, don't listen to this guy, man.
But so, I did. That's why I've never gave you stick for it, other than a bit of jesting. Because when I was, I got to about 19 and 20, and I'd gone from Sutton to Enfield, and Enfield were as big a club.
Yeah.
You know, they had all internationals there, and I sort of went in there on bigger and better money. And
what actual internationals?
Yeah, they had England internationals, as in England C team.
Yeah, you know,
like the amateur England. And but it was more apparent back then when I was playing. It was like, you know, the England amateurs was, you know, you played three or four times a year. It weren't just like
one
period in the season now, like it is. It was a little bit more so. They had about three or four players in the Enfield side, but from there, they signed a goalkeeper called Andy Pape, who'd become a close friend of mine, who was the England goalkeeper, believe it or not. And he'd become number one and I'd become number two.
Right.
I'd never experienced that other than that little period
at Fulham. Yeah.
And I thought, no, I don't want this. Yeah. I don't want to be just number two. I was 19, no 20. I'd just left Sutton to chase a little bit of money and first team football.
Was Enfield in the National League?
No, they were actually in the league underneath that fed the National League.
Yeah, okay.
But they'd
okay.
made signings to get out. Like, I mean, Graham Roberts was the manager. Remember the old Tottenham centre back, Graham Roberts?
Graham Roberts, yeah.
Yeah, big, you know, England and you know, Tottenham and such. Like, he was the manager with George Borg, another.
Wait, he was the manager at Enfield?
At Enfield.
All right.
Is this Enfield Town, yeah?
Yeah. Well, wow. It's not. It's Enfield Town formed after, you know, Enfield, the actual Enfield going back in the day, was a big non league club. Big, like, I'm talking like all them National League top sides, Enfield were. They'd played at the top level, but they disbanded. They went bust.
Yeah.
And then Enfield Town formed.
They'd done a fan form.
They'd done a fan. The fans formed Enfield Town. And that's where it's but they were signing big hitters. It was like, you look at, I mean, like even.
Bit of Ricky before.
Yeah.
I won't say now. I'll let you off now. Yeah.
Make sure.
We'll get on to that.
But, you know, but they had big money. They were signing everything. And I then become second choice there. And I just couldn't. I played the first half of the season. I played the first 4 months as first choice. But they were still signing everything that moved.
They're just trying to buy it.
And we were second. And we ended up, I think they ended up, did they win the league that year or finish second and not go up? I think they finished second and not and didn't go up. But, you know, and I then went and started chasing.
Let's
be honest. Life as a number two keeper is tough, isn't it?
Don't get injured or don't have a drop in form. You're not playing.
Yeah, so you're not playing.
It's not like we can throw Cow off to the left or we can put him in the 10.
No variation.
We can, I used him at right back once or twice. Not very well, but, you know. But you can. You can play in other positions. Goalkeeper, you got
no
chance.
That's so, it, one position. No, and what were you like then in terms of like your character? What signs were there that actually you could possibly make a decent coach or decent manager?
In the early stages, none. Other than I was football intelligent. So you didn't need to tell me, you know, stuff more than once. They say that makes a good player, and a good player for a coach or manager anyway, is you don't have to keep repeating and
of course,
over and over. And that doesn't, listen, most players, you have to keep repeating what you said. But I felt like you told me something once, it was normally stuck. So I had, and again, as I say, I had an interest in the tactical side of football, shapes, systems, and you know, how you set up against other shapes. From an early age, I feel back then that I would be here now, nearly 1,000 games deep as a manager? No, definitely.
In terms of,
and let me just put it out there, somebody who has a stand named after himself.
Oh, you got a stand?
Yeah.
I mean,
you forgot about that, didn't you?
I feel like after 13 years, you pretty much is.
I think it was after 10 though.
Yeah, I think I had 10. We'd moved. See, that's what I say. The time I had at Hendon, which, you know, we'd gone through. We'd had three different stadiums. We'd gone one year. We had a nomadic life. One year where we played at five different home grounds.
Oh, wow.
You know, we went Northwood and Harrow and Slough.
Wow.
And didn't have nowhere to play. But then we had a ground share agreement at Wembley for 3 years.
Oh, wow.
Which is sort of combined counties level five, but their ground and pitch was lovely. And then we went to Harrow Borough for 3 years. And each time we had a move, I felt a duty to get us settled in the new surroundings, if that makes sense. So when I say I felt dutiful, in each little, you know, facet where we moved on, it was like, he'll get us sorted there. He'll, you know, become familiar with it. And it just become dutiful, you know. And then once we got becoming Edgeware become available on SJP, which is where you signed.
Yeah.
That become our home ground.
So you finally got a home. Yeah.
We finally could call home. And we'd spent seven, eight years on the road. No home venue, no. And all them bits sort of, that's why there was me and Graham Etchell. Remember Graham?
Graham
was the secretary.
Yes, I do remember.
It was like me and him running the football club. Although it was owned by fans and they were, learning on the job, it was me and Graham that was running the day-to-day club. And that's why I say dutiful. I just felt it was my club. And it was, if I stepped away, I'm not sure where this club
Yeah,
was.
You're not
no,
sure.
No, it was. It was.
Hence why you ended up staying for so long.
One season, we had no budget at all. No budget. Then we'd had £1,000 for the whole squad and management for about 2 years. It was like, you're talking about no money for a period of time. And again, I see it as a challenge. We stayed in the division every year. We got a reprieve 1 year where we finished fourth from bottom. We thought we were going down, but a team disbanded and we ended up staying up. I still stand by the 12 years there. We should have been relegated 9 of the 12 years we were there.
But that's a success.
So that was the challenge. The challenge was always, can we be competitive?
Yeah.
We always was competitive to middle to top.
Yeah,
that's pretty amazing.
We were never, other than that one season, I say to you that we really struggled. Outside of that, we always had a competitive, hardworking, organized side. But
and I think what I find, and I was thinking about this, especially this morning, what I find most outstanding about it is, I think anyone can kind of come in and do a decent job for a short period of time. But it's the consistency over a long period. Number one, you've touched upon it, but what keeps you motivated for players that have been there for maybe a longer period of time? How do you keep them invigorated? How do you keep them interested? How do you, so even if we look at the top end of things, you've got the Wengers and you've got the Sir Alex Fergusons that have been at one club for ages. I think it's really difficult to be at a club for such a long time, keep things fresh, keep things ticking, keep people inspired. How do you approach that?
Well, I always say this, and it's funny you mentioned that, because we had cycles at Hendon. It felt like cycles. And the cycles were the different grounds we went to.
Okay.
So we were one place for five places in one. Then we had 3 years. Then we had 3 years. Then all of a sudden we found home. So there was cycles in it. But we also had cycles within recruitment, within the team. And Cal was part of this. It's, when we got later down the years, but we always assembled a good, young, hungry side. And it sort of took a period of time to build. We always called it a 3-year cycle. Year one, we started to assemble. Year two, we started to develop and see progression. Year three, we felt like we were challenging.
Yeah.
Now, we had 3 playoff years in them 10, 11 years or 12 years, whatever it was there, outside the first couple of years, which were, first 3 years were a complete struggle. I mean, it was like peeing in the wind. It really was, But we still was competitive and still staying in. But the next 8, 9 years, we felt like we were building something every cycle.
Yeah.
Got to the end of the 3-year period. We missed out in the playoffs by a point, last game of the season in the early cycle. Next cycle, we got beat in the playoff final against Margate. And then the next cycle, we got beat in the playoff game against Dulwich.
Oh, wow.
So that was 3 cycles. But end of each cycle, I had a decision to make. It always felt like, have I taken this as far as I can go?
Yeah.
Do I need a new challenge?
Mm.
But it always fell back that the team would end up disbanding. It would we'd lose 100%. 7, 8, 10. We'd this one would go there. This one would go to this club.
All right.
We'd sell this one to there. So we'd end up 7 or 8 players short of where we, had been the season.
You started,
so it was a rebuild again. So motivation with me was, right, let's go and see if we can do it again.
Let's do it again.
The challenge. It did become a bit draining. It did, and in them periods, I did have some dark times where I thought, I've lost the whole front line. I've lost me 2 centre backs. I mean, where am I going to find?
How did you get players in?
Recruitment. I had 4 or 5, guys that were out there that used to game watch for me.
Yeah.
So I'd get phone calls and you've got to go and have a look at him. Charlie Good is a perfect example for you.
Yeah.
He's playing at Brookhouse. He's 19 years old. He's, you've got to go 6'3", 6'5". When I watched him like him, went and watched him again, like him, sent my assistant, signed him, ended up signing, you know, he's at Brentford now in the Premier League.
All right.
But, you know, it's them phone calls that you take every one of them seriously.
Yeah.
You know, the people that were doing it for us, there was other managers at lower levels that would ring me and say, we come up against someone today, a Cal Da Costa, he ripped us a new, you know.
Yeah, a new one. Yeah,
you better go and have a look at him. Yeah. And that's how it... So we would have...
Word of mouth.
And you know, I was at a game again last night. I'm just constant. I'm always watching, always looking. And there's now I've got a little list that are from the league underneath us. I know Billericay's a different animal. They can pick and choose the bigger and better.
Yeah, they've got and a more of a name, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's a different... I mean, this is different for me.
Yeah.
We'll go on to our even year. I've always had to shop in different shops to others. I'd have to go and pick the young and untried and untested, the hungry, the cheap option. You know,
and that's it. What did you
look for?
I didn't
have the £150 to go and pay for a player. I had to go and take the one who was untried, untested, but do it for £30 or £40.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I would see progression. I'd say, yeah, there's £70 or £80.
Yeah.
And it was that type of player. I mean, we got to the playoff game against Margate where they were paying.
They were
another team like Billericay when Glenn was there and just paying fortunes out. I played a playoff final game. It was, we had the home fixture, and I if I'm not mistaken, I had 7 players earning less than 3 figures in a playoff final.
Oh, wow.
You know, so that tells you the type of budget and where we were working. It was, you know... So they were different. So again, that was another challenge, and that's what motivates
you. That's what keeps you going,
seeing progression, seeing unearthing little gems and such. Like, yeah, listen, some don't polish up.
Yeah, yeah. You're gonna miss someone. You can't hit them.
Hit or miss.
Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah.
Not everyone polishes up to be shining bright.
Yeah.
But they polish up to do a job.
Yeah.
So it's just balancing off. Some don't polish up at all, and you have to move them on quicker than you would want. But that's management. It's just identifying that and working with it very, very quickly. Be it release, be it, you know, improve, be it move them on. You know, it's you know.
But for me, what's important as well is when I first went to Hendon, for me, it was like hearing players that I've been there for like 10 years. Mm. So like Dave, the Healy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Been there. And I remember like times I'd get there to training early, me and Fimble would get there. Yeah. And we'd be sitting with Dave and I'm talking to Dave one day. I'm like, yeah, well, how long have you been there? He's like, yeah, like 10 years.
Wow.
And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, 10 years. And I'm like, and I think there was a few others. So the McLarens.
Yeah, McLarens, like, Dave. We at one stage... We played in a game, and this is Graham Etchell sharing it, or Dave Balhemy. Remember Big Dave?
Yes, yeah.
I think we had 7 players in a starting 11 that had more than 100 games under their belt.
Madden.
You know, which again is, you know,
that's
incredible,
yeah. So in all these cycles, so you've got one or two consistent players.
Yeah, there was a bit of continuity.
Yeah.
I had a bit of loyalty in my group.
That's
I had
amazing.
2 McLarens, like you said, that offered to play for nothing virtually. They're, you know, 2 sort of players that I could really relate to. They were warriors, they were soldiers, they were aggressors.
They
brought everyone up to there, and they were what I built the team around, you know, because they just had that identity that you want in your team.
Yeah.
But then Dave was another one, another warrior, another soldier.
Soldier.
You know, the most unlikely looking Dave you'll ever find.
Yeah.
You know, but he was again, he's gone back there from St. Albans.
Yeah, he
now,
has. Yeah,
he's something like 450 odd games there or something.
Yeah.
It's like 500 games. It's like, and he was one of my early, he turned up just completely out of the blue.
He
wasn't even scouting him. He turned up and said, can I come in? We see something immediately. And then when he is 400 or 500 games on.
Well, that's it. A few questions do pop to mind then, because you obviously mentioned you having to take a risk on some players, whereas others could maybe go for more tried and tested player. What did you look for? What was it that was it just ability alone or?
No, I don't think it's just ability. It's character.
Okay.
I think you're coming into an environment that you've got to have a certain type of personality, you know, and a certain type of character. You've got to understand that, you know, we've got to work harder than the opposition.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, so you've got to have a work ethic. You've got to have the understanding that you're not going to, you know, you're not going to earn fortunes in comparison to other teams in the division, but we're going to more likely demand more of you.
Yeah.
So some fell away on that front. You know, some might be earning 60, 70, 80 pounds, but we'd still expect them to be Tuesday session, Thursday session, Saturday game or Tuesday game, Thursday session. We never had days off. It was never, you know, we expected a professional, you know, approach. So again, that takes commitment, that takes sacrifice. So you're looking at individuals that, you know, can make that commitment to you, to make your, you know, your building as professional as it possibly can. I'm sure Cal will tell you that in the way we work, we are pretty demanding.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I was a little bit noisier when Cal first come through the door, and he always says I was a one manager that shouted him a lot, but that's because you're trying to get, you know, into him what the, you know, what the identity is of your team,
of the craft,
your work. And I stand by it. When he first came, I didn't think he was a grafter. I thought he was a flair player.
Yeah, I'm
telling you, anyone that's worked with him in the last 5 or 6 years will tell you the opposite. He grafts as much as he flares.
Yeah.
I feel like, I don't know, I'm not...
My first stint at Hendon, I didn't really enjoy it because obviously I didn't play as much as I wanted to. I felt like I was trying to work hard. And to be fair, the money thing is funny because I took a pay cut to go there as well. And I remember we had a conversation and I was like, look, I just want to play the level. Like, I'll take a pay cut, and then we got the deal over the line.
Seems my type of player, you know. type of conversations work well with me. You know?
So I took up, and then coming in, and then like I'm not playing. But then what was really good was training. Was really really good.
Yeah, we always
training
make
was
it intense.
So competitive. Yeah. And like I said earlier about like FA Cup theme, that was like massive.
Yeah.
Like, I looked forward to FA Cup theme.
Yeah. What was FA Cup?
So FA Cup theme was like, if we were playing on, say if we had a game on the, we had a game on a Saturday, like an FA Cup game, on Thursday we'd do all sort of like, it'd be like games and stuff. So it'd be quite fun. Training would be fun, but competitive.
Okay.
So there'd be like three teams and you've got little tasks to do.
All right.
So there might be like one where there's someone like taking scores and you've got to pass the ball into a certain area, isn't it? Things like that.
We'd devise different, you know, competitions within three little phases, and it'd always finish with a game at the end.
Always at the game.
And we'd always make it so that the points total still took it to the game at the end.
It was, I mean, we do.
I mean, he'll tell you that all training and everyone who's worked under me is my sort of, you know, my identity is to train how you play,
you know,
and create intensity, create tempo. Of course, there's a time for tactical and a little bit slower approach, but normally my sessions are competitive, intense with tempo. And they're the ones that are most enjoyable, and that's why most
I loved it.
But them little compos, they were...
they were slow.
What he's not telling you, what we would do, the losing team...
Yeah, I was about to tell
would
you.
..would have a...
A forfeit.
Related to, it could be, there would have been, we might say it was Kylie Minogue, you know, that was the forfeit.
The theme, yeah. They'd be saying,
Kylie Minogue. And what it would mean, that losing team would have to turn up costume, like as in, you know, if, whatever it be, it might be a wig, might be glasses.
Or buy your own costume as well.
And sing a Kylie Minogue song pre-game.
Pre-game, before the game.
Then we'd have items of clothing they had to wear. We had club track suits. One of them, one year, one compo was had to wear shoes, didn't you? Not trainers.
I went on that one.
You know, with your club track suit, you'd have to wear shoes or something. It would be funny hats. It would be women's underwear. We done one.
Someone wore women's underwear. I don't want to say.
Who. Yourself.
That was so enjoyable because even just before the game, you'd have that sort of togetherness.
Obviously,
you do what you have to do, and then you'd have that. I remember because we played Dulwich and we won at Dulwich after that.
And I was like, mate,
this is lead. This is amazing.
So what made you then finally decide to move on?
We'd moved to SJP, which become home. It was like, you know, it was the place where, you know, we'd worked for 7, 8, 9 years to, you know, to make happen. I thought then I'd put Hendon back in the sort of, you know, in a place of security.
Okay.
It'd taken a lot of work outside of me. It's not, you know, I was just the football front, but I did feel the football front is everything in terms of the football club. If that's not right, nothing's right. So, but a lot of people, a lot of supporters, David Bedford, Simon Lawrence, Graham Etchell, people in the background had worked really hard to get the move to SJ. And when we went, I started to feel like, right now, it might be time for me to challenge myself.
Okay.
It might be time for me to see if a new challenge out there is going to sort of ignite me again. And I sort of, we had a couple of years there and we were in, when we went across, I think we were in year 2 of the cycle. but we had had a real tough year. We stayed up by the skin of our teeth.
You was at the game.
Oh, yeah, that's the one.
We played Staines, didn't we?
Yeah, that's
Staines,
the one.
That was, it was Staines. We scored. Casey scored.
Yeah, Casey scored.
Yeah, I remember that.
That picture is like everywhere.
That picture is
now.
That
oh, really?
It's with the crowd are going wild. Going, and he's like,
yeah.
You know, and that was an equaliser that kept us up. It was the last game of the season.
Yeah, so no, I remember the scenes there were absolutely
kickoff
wild.
Get delayed as well, didn't
it? Yeah, the referee turned up really late.
Yeah, that was an interesting game. Weather was lovely, though. I remember that.
But yeah, but it was a big crowd. It was like, you know, but that following year, we was a playoff team. And when we got to that playoff season, we got beat by Dulwich on penalties. We had a front four to die for.
Yeah, that front four
to die. Nico Muir, Zach Joseph, Ashley Nathaniel, George, and Josh Walker, all of them moved on from us. But
one of them went with you though, didn't it?
Yeah, Zach come with me. Yeah, we thought we'd had a good one in Zach to get him across to Hampton when I went to Hampton. But I got to the end of that year and I looked at that group and I knew that half of it would be moving on. They were not earning what they should.
Yeah.
The front four had been unplayable, so they were all gonna.
Yeah.
You know,
front four's a
and I just it was that period of sort of when we got beaten out on within 2 days. 48 hours, I knew I needed a new challenge. Time was right.
Okay.
And I'd never felt like that more so
than that time.
And after that time, it was 5,000 now or something. It was
I came and watched before
wild.
When you went, you played Folkestone, didn't you?
Folkestone 4-1.
Yeah, I come and watched that. Yeah,
we was good on that day. It just blew them away. But, you know, we thought we'd beat Dulwich. We thought we'd be promoted. And I'd still, this is gospel truth, and I was asked this question on a couple of different bits I've done. If we'd have gone up, would you have
left? Yeah, that's, left? That was
and
my
I
question.
Still, to this day, couldn't answer it. I wouldn't say I would have definitely stayed at Hendon or I'd have definitely moved on to Hampton because the Hampton, Douse moved on from, you know, from Hampton to Woking.
Yeah.
And he said, look, they want you. They're going to make an approach for you. Are you interested? And it was within that 48 hours and within 3 days of that playoff game, they were on the phone to me. So if we'd have gone up, I'd have had a decision to make between the two because apparently Hampton was still going to
make an offer.
It was, you know, but looking, we'd taken Hendon again. Our budget was more likely 1/5 for Dulwich's in that playoff final.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Is that Gavin Rose's Dulwich?
Gavin Rose, Junior Cads's group.
You lost on pens though.
We'd won up going into the second half. They equalised midway through the second half and then the game just, it was a horrible hot, beautiful hot day.
Yeah, but not
horrible to play, isn't it?
Horrible to play and the pitch was like a dust ball.
Yeah.
It was, and the game just died on itself, you know? Right from when they equalised, both teams then didn't want to lose it. And, you know, we had enough about us, I felt, to go on, but we just never did. Beating that game, and I think it was the moment.
Nico played, no?
Nico played, yeah. Josh played.
Nathaniel
Georgie went to Crawley. He's an unbelievable player. One of the most talented players.
Who was the most talented out of that four?
Josh Walker was. He looked like he was destined for bigger and better, but he could play. Ashley Nathaniel George's best position. I know he's playing central midfield now for Maidenhead, which is nothing. I'd never have said that he would have done that, but he was only really off the left.
Okay.
We played him off the right on the occasion, but he just wasn't as effective. He had to play. He had that everyone knew he was going to come in on his right foot, but you still couldn't stop
him. Yeah.
You still had that body swerve and that get people off balance and then go and they can't recover. He just done it. He scored 17 goals. He had about 15 assists. He was more likely the most talented. Nico was effective.
Nico
he scored 40 plus goals. He was Zach was the assist. I think he had something like 20 something assists that year. So it was like across the four of them. Josh Mulay had the lower stats, as in goals and assists, but he was more likely, you know, when we look back now, he fell in our lap just by, you know, an agent I still work with now. And he was a talented boy, but I knew all four of them.
We were gone.
I mean, Zach, we fought to get in the building at Hampton because he had others in for him.
Nico got bored, didn't he, as well?
Nico, we offered 10 grand for him at Hampton. We wanted him to come into us, but Hartlepool pipped us. I think 15K they bought him for.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he ended up going to Hartlepool full time. I don't think he ever got settled with the cold weather, did he?
No, do not. We're getting him one anyway. So, yeah, big up Nico. We're going to get him one.
Yeah, he had an unbelievable season. The best season I think he's ever had in his his career.
Nice.
You know, another player we realigned and got back on track. But no, he was brilliant for us. And he's a lovely lad. He's a friend of mine now. He's had some troubles to deal with as well over the course of the last few years, and I've always stayed close and tight with him. So,
okay, good man. So 12, 13 years at Hendon, and how long were you at Hampton?
4.5 years. We had the two COVID years in there.
All right.
I took over Hampton from Dowse, and he completely robbed my changing room.
Yeah.
He took, I think, he had 18 players signed, and I think 5 of them were loanees. 2 of them were coming to the end of their time. And he took 8 or 9.
Yeah, he took that Max Chris Rinder.
It left me 2 players.
Wow.
So I went in there with 2 players. I was going into a football club at a new level, which I'd never managed at, which I felt I was capable of.
But
I was no players. Yeah. So I took what I could from the Hendon team that I thought could. Tom Lovelock, Michael Corcoran, Casey McLaren, Zach Joseph.
It was like playing Hendon. Right?
Yeah. And we took, but then we had to build around that. That was the core of the team.
Yeah.
But Casey done reasonably well. Cork's done reasonably well. But it just felt like the tempo and energy of that league, they struggled a little bit to make that happen. Because it's higher tempo. It's higher.
Yeah. Ollie was there, no? Ollie Sprague?
Ollie Sprague come in, yeah. I think we took about 6 for it, but that didn't get well received by the Hampton crowd. They sort of shouted off a little bit, taking all these level 3 players, and it was a bit disrespectful because that group would have been a level 2 side all but one penalty.
Yeah.
You know,
what surprised me was that whole thing around Arthur. I didn't understand it. So, like, Arthur wasn't allowed to come.
Yeah, but because it was I can't remember what the reason was for that. You know, it was something to do with a fee or something or other. I was so confused about it. I can't actually remember what the story was with that. I'd moved on from it, but it was Simon. Simon blocked it.
Simon blocked it in some way.
It was something to do with they'd sell him to someone else, but not to Hampton.
Yeah.
Because we'd already taken some of their players. It was something along them sort of lines, you know.
But he was like instrumental in what they were doing. Like, he was a big player.
I ended up playing
with him again at Tonbridge, so it was good for me.
Yeah, good player.
Top player.
But yeah, he wouldn't sell him to me.
We were
prepared to buy him, but
it was madness.
So yeah, it was empty change room, had to build a completely new side.
Yeah.
Did you have Dicko there as well, didn't you?
I signed Dicko, he was one of my main signings.
Dicko gets brought up every episode.
How many clubs has he paid for?
One of my favourite football people, let me tell you.
Still unbelievable,
to this day, his energy and enthusiasm is infectious.
Okay.
He was 33 years old when we signed him, and he was fit, he was strong,
fast,
looked after himself. He scored 18 goals in that season. At Conference South. He was, but it was just these, it was just, he exuded that, you know, that way that everyone just feeds off him.
He
was in the change room doing all these before most people didn't even know what TikToks that he does and all these things where he was doing them and he was round the
chair.
But the players loved him. He was just a real character, and
he led
the line for us. But it took a bit of time. We started well, then we fell off, and then we come again and we finished strongly.
Okay.
But then, I mean, it's just my second year, and it was as if someone up there was saying, "Welcome back to Hendon," because it was chairman moved on, moved back to the northeast. Graham, who actually took me on, Graham Wood, he moved back to the northeast, and the vice chairman took on the football club, not wanting anything really to do with it. And he was like, it was forced upon him in a roundabout way, and he cut my budget to next to nothing.
Oh, wow.
And when I say cut my budget, I'm talking cut my budget to less than what I was working at Hendon the year before.
Do you think maybe that's part of the reason they brought you in?
Maybe it was in their thinking.
Because they knew that.
Think that to this day. They knew I'd worked with lesser resources and was capable of doing it. But that league is even more unforgiving. So, you know, we signed a really good group on a limited budget in my second year. But I think we won 1, drew 1 and lost 9. in our first 11 games, and we were sitting second or third from bottom. And what happened? The Jamal Lowe transfer happened.
He went from Portsmouth
to Wigan.
Yeah.
We'd already sold him to Portsmouth the year before I come in. They also sold him for minimal amount of money, but had a 25% sell on.
Oh my God.
And he went for 1.3 million to Wigan. Oh my God. So what happened with the Hampton had an injection of money.
Yeah.
So the chairman all of a sudden had no option other than to say, hey, oh, Gary, here's your budget man type thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we signed Sam Cox, we signed Jake Gray, we signed about four players that just helped the young group that we'd put together, and we marched like you wouldn't believe.
I hated playing you.
And the season finished due to COVID.
We were
a point off the playoffs, like with that same
year. Didn't they do the points per game thing, innit?
That year, because we'd played on, it was the only game that played on the Saturday. Everyone else had called off because of COVID, but we had enough players to play, and so did Oxford City on the day. And we played and drew 1-1. We had Luke Ruddock, our captain, sent off, and we drew 1-1 when we should have won because Oxford were faltering a little at that time. And that 1-1 created a points per game total where we missed out by 0.03. So 3% of a point we missed out on. And, Dorking pipped us.
So frustrating.
And that was because if we hadn't played that game, we'd have been in the points per game by half a point or something or other. It was something like, because we played that game, it killed us. And that was honestly COVID.
Used to hate playing against them. You'd be in my ear, give me a stick. When I was on his side.
The ref that he's just diving.
Literally, I wouldn't do anything. I would hear him say something like, yeah, he's a diver. Yeah. Kel da Costa's a diver. Yeah. I'm like, mate, what are you doing?
He's trying to derail him.
Do you know what's so funny?
Before we even like go in, he done that to one of our players at Chatham.
Yeah.
And we played them in the cup game. And I'm going to do it because obviously my Chatham boy isn't low. So he called out, like, one of our players had an all right game against him. And we won against him in the cup. So we're in the final of that cup. And Gary's gone out after the game. He's gone to him. Oh, what did you say to him? He said,
he put us on penalties.
Then he said,
did you score yours?
I went on then.
Good question. <Yeah.
laughs> Then he said to him, yeah, don't worry. I've got something for you when we play you in a couple of weeks. You weren't even playing against our starting right back. So that's what he said to him.
Famous last words, because it fired him up. He was unplayable on the day.
He just kept...
Was he playing against the starting right back?
Our right back's been unbelievable this year. We've just given him a new deal. He's a 20-year-old kid, but he has been outstanding all year. But we'd rested him on that day. Still brought in a very good right back, I jested with him as he come off the pitch. Yeah. Like I always congratulate him, jested. And it was no more than just a bit. And I said
just a bit
of
banner.
And he was saying, yeah, I've got you. Like playing the game. And I said, yeah, just wait for the 2 weeks later. Waiting 2 weeks when you've got our regular right back. He's gonna eat you up.
He
said, bring it, let's see. Yeah. Well, he ain't played like it since.
But he was. He had like three assists in the first half.
Well, he claimed one of them was an assist. And then, I told him that after.
Then he won a pen.
Yeah.
I scored his pen.
Yeah.
I think you was frustrated with your keeper because you told him
where it was going.
And it went where I told
him. He didn't go there. Man.
He was, fair play. I'm one of them that, just pat him on the back and say, because my bench, we're getting the ump with him. Because as he's walking back, he's going, got you, Gaffer. giving it to me. And I'm saying, even though he's teaching us a lesson to a degree, we're not doubling up, we're not doing enough with him.
Yeah.
I'm actually admiring his.
He's got a bit of that
brash sort of confident. But my staff are trying to back me, and I'm telling him to sit down and let him have his moment because he was backing up what he said.
I love that.
I'm all for that, you know?
Yeah, so we're running out of time, so we need to get on to Billy Ricky very quickly because we got literally minutes. So when you heard about Billy Ricky, obviously you mentioned before going to Hampton and Richmond that you wanted a challenge.
Yeah.
So when you heard about Billy Ricky, were you thinking this is even more of a challenge? And were you a little bit daunted by the prospect? I say that because I think Billy Ricky is quite notorious in That's in football point. Generally. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Obviously,
you say got a little more than that. Yeah,
yeah, go on.
What you're saying is exactly. I mean, look, I'd had, and we didn't get on to the end of Hampton. I mean, what had happened? I'd had 4.5 really good years there, positive years. 2 of the years were playoff teams. My last year was a little bit of a struggle, but we had had a ridiculous amount of injuries. They had a takeover, and when they had the takeover, new guys come in, wanted their own person, and they moved me on. So in January, I got moved. First time I've ever experienced a handshake and said, thank you very much. It was a phone call.
Okay.
Yeah. 4.5 years there, and it was just a phone call on a Monday morning. Thanks very much, but we're going in a different direction.
Wow.
Which was a little, I felt a little bit disrespected at the time.
At least a meeting, come on.
It's football. You could have done that on the Saturday, you know. But, but even so, we moved on from there. I'd had my first time, this is, you know, the January to the end of the season, the first period of time outside of COVID that I'd had away from football. And, you know, I had a novelty of the first four weeks, phone was ringing and messages of good luck and, you know, and joy your period or, you know, whatever it was. But I had four months out and loved every minute of it. And I was saying to my wife, I'm not sure.
You're going
to
go back
I'm going to, you know, I'm going to, yeah, not going to go back, but there was that. Something's got to be right. It's got to be something that's going to really pull me back in. I don't want what you've just said there, you know, having that tag that you're going to work with limited resources. And it's because that is, it's twice as much work, three times as much work.
It's got to be right, you're saying.
So it felt like it needed to be right. And I'd had 3 or 4 phone calls from different clubs, level 3 clubs, you know, and clubs that I could feel that it was that type of gig.
Yeah.
You know? And I just felt, you know, yeah, that's not going to pull me back in. It's not. I said to her, I can see me enjoying my time out here. Maybe Chelsea season tickets up again. And we're, but out the blue, Billericay called. And, you know, and I went and met. And it was a couple of games, I think, the season to go or something or other. And I went and met the owners and it sort of aligned with where I was at.
Yeah.
It was daunting because, I mean, what I've struggled with this year, well, not me so much, but the players in our change room, what you've just said there, that notorious Billericay there, the culture that surrounded them for the last 4 years, there's a dislike. And my two owners don't like me saying it, you know, but they relate and they understand what I mean.
Yeah.
Not many people like the badge.
Yeah, yeah, let's be honest. You know, that's the stigma around Billericay.
Everyone's still, it feels like, raises their game against them. They walk through our stadium gates and, be fair, I was impressed with Chatham. We're like a football league stadium.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, suites, first VIP suites, stands all the way round.
Yeah.
Wonderful state-of-the-art pitch. It's like walking into a football. So everyone walks in, raises their game because of that, but then they also raise it a bit more because it's Billericay.
Yeah, it's Billericay. They're like the Man City of non-league.
Yeah, we've suffocated with that a little bit, my changing room. Said it to you on the way down here. We've not had enough of the nasty sort of niggly type players that can deal,
that can
with,
deal
that
with that.
Bring
it,
you know, bring it to me. I'll deal with it.
Yeah,
you know,
I'll take it.
I'll,
yeah,
I'll
feed
give
off
a bit
it.
Back.
Get someone sent off.
I've not got that in my room at the present. But when the job was offered, it was good. Best budget I've had to work with, the best facilities I've had to work with, more likely the most committed and ambitious owners I've worked for.
Yeah.
It just all felt, and I said to my wife, when I'd had my first meet with them, I went and had a second meet with them, and I sort of had a really positive second meet, and I sort of come away and I said to my wife, if I don't get this or I don't take it, I don't think I'll ever go back in, because it just felt, it was such a big club with such ambition and such, you know, you felt like there was a
so it's like nothing else would match that sort of thing.
Without going into detail as well, but I think what they showed faith in you with is the security of the deal that they offered you as well. Like obviously it's well known. Yeah. But yeah, like the security they've put faith in you.
Yeah, well it was the project of, I mean, they'd had a rough 2 or 3 years. They'd had you know, a relegation in there, or you know, a season last year where they wanted to do better, and I think they you know, they see it as they wanted progression this year, and then they wanted promotion year two, and then year three, hopefully you'd be in a level up and you're looking to stabilise yourself in the level up. I threw it back at them and said I wanted promotion year one. I added more pressure onto my shoulders.
Yeah, I love
that's
that.
The but type that's, of that's the, yeah, person that's I about. Am. I felt that I could get them out of the division. I've come up short. You know, looking at where we're at the moment, we're sitting eighth. We've We've gone from being a top two side. Admittedly, Chatham marched on us.
What went wrong? Let me ask you for this season. What are your thoughts there?
I think we've lacked that little bit of, you know, that little bit of edge, that little bit of steel, that little bit of gamesmanship, the ability to deal with the dislike for the badge.
Yeah,
you know, players bringing it every moment.
Yeah.
You know, our local rivals, your hashtags, your canvies, they're right up for you. Do you know what I mean? It's Billericay in town.
Mm.
We're well supported. We're more likely outside of Dulwich, Chatham have moved up as well, but we're more likely one of the most well supported home and away sides in the division. So we bring plenty of fans with us. We have a good home, you know, nearly four figures virtually every game. It's a big club. It's a big, big club in that league. And I just feel our change room has struggled mentally to be able to cope with that.
But then again, you've had injuries.
And, I mean, I don't look for excuses. I try and look for solutions always. Yeah. And that's how I've always managed. But we have had a ridiculous amount of injuries this year, right from game one. I mean, even Saturday, we've just played Saturday and, you know, got beat against Wingate. But six key players sitting in the stands.
Mm.
And I mean key players. I'm talking Aziz. I'm talking Pollock. I'm talking Levers. I'm talking Wells, I'm talking Ramsey, I'm talking, you know, big players that, you know, would be in and around you. But listen, we've dealt with that all season. So that has been one of the reasons. But there's the other reasons, I believe, that we need to have a little bit more of a steely side to us. We've got experience in there, but, experience and age don't... It can be a young man. You've got that niggly, nasty side to you.
Yeah.
I mean, all managers have that motto, well, most do, no dickheads in your change room.
Yeah.
But we needed a couple of dickheads.
Just to rile everyone up.
He was
a
dickhead on a few occasions when we've come up against him. But I respect that. It's a good side of the beard.
It's a good dickhead. Yeah,
it's a good dickhead. But it is. We've needed a little bit of that edge at times. Talented group, and we've got a young group. I mean, you know, really, people don't realise it's a very young group with experience in there, but we just needed that little edge that in this bit of adversity and this trouble that we've had in the last 8-10 games, we've not coped mentally with it, and we've not been able to realign ourselves quickly enough.
That's a very honest assessment there. We've got a few more minutes, so what I'll ask is, have you realigned the aims? Is it playoff?
We've got a game Saturday at Dulwich. Dulwich have marched over. I mean, I think we was about 17 points clear of them at one stage. They've now gone.
You lot was up there, though.
We were second for most of the season. Us and you were sort of, weren't we? You went, we went, went. And it was sort of between us. And you've now obviously marched because you've stayed consistent. We have been inconsistent. But we've got six games left. We find ourselves 5 or 6 points outside the playoffs. But there's so many teams that have got to play each other in that top eight. If you look at our running, we go to Dulwich Saturday. We got Carl Shorten, the third from last or second from last game. And outside of that, I think we've Haringey, Chesant, Margate and Concord. We've got no disrespect for them because they're all fighting and playing for future.
It will be difficult going there.
They should be winnable games though.
But they're not like playing a Hornchurch, a Chatham, you know, so the Dulwich game the weekend is D-Day. We've set it up this week as D-Day. You know, Wingate was, and we were, till the 94th minute, we were looking like we had the 3 points in the bag.
They're probably together, one of the teams up there, man.
Riff's a close friend of mine who's their manager, and I sort of speak to him, and he's got a really young together group.
Man.
There's energy in the side. There's a bit of flair. Cavalio and Long have been excellent this season. I've been impressed with them, Cal, is that they've been true to their system.
They play
game one.
I agree with that.
Okay.
You know, they've got a system that they play, which is that box with the back three, and they've done it.
No winners.
They've never deviated from it. So credit to them. But we've got Dulwich the weekend. If we get beat or draw, I think it's over. That's it. I think we need 5 wins and a draw or 6 wins. I mean, and that's a big ask. But is this team and change room capable of it? We went 8 straight wins at one stage in the season. So, of course, it's capable.
Just doing something
but
you've done already.
Mentally, we're in a bit of a precarious, vulnerable position at the moment. And we've got to... Listen, last 3 games, we've been much better.
Yeah.
We have been more like ourselves. But We need a win Saturday.
Well, best of luck. All right, we like to end the show.
Not too much luck, mate. Not too much luck.
Yeah. We like to end
the playoffs. Yeah.
That'll be a good one.
We like to end the show with something we call one touch finish. So just quick fire questions. Good so question. Literally the first thing that comes to mind. That's what you're gonna say. Yeah. All right. So best team you played this season.
Hornchurch.
Okay, nice. Best stadium.
But Hornchurch.
No, you can't tell you. Right? Best stadium in your league.
Billericay.
Nice. Loudest fans in your league.
Billericay.
Okay. Let's see. Do you allow your players, like it's a cold wintry day, are gloves allowed to be worn?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Can players train in tracksuit bottoms or not?
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. This is a bit of a biased one. Maybe I'll let you opt out of this one if you want to say it. But your favorite current player? Could be in the league, could be in your team, could be anything.
Favorite current player? In our league or anywhere?
It could be anywhere.
Cole Palmer.
Okay.
Oh,
Cole Palmer.
Yeah,
so Chelsea-ish, man. Chelsea
I can't
bias.
Help it. I've got to,
can we have
Chelsea.
One in your
Louis
league?
Louis Diaz. You know, I like him. I like him a lot.
We can take that one. But what can we have one in your league?
In our league, who's been the most impressive against us in our league? I'd have to say on the day it would have been Jamie Young.
I knew you were going to say that.
It was. And I'm not shy to say that. Yeah. He backed up his verbal.
Okay, nice. Perfect. All right, we'll start that there. And lastly, to end the show, we like to do something called Drop a Gem.
Yeah.
Where we get our last guest, we get every guest to drop a kind of words of wisdom and just a thought on the game. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to drop one for the next guest. So our last guest spoke about the fact that the game's changing. It's a lot more about stats and figures and data and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that? It could be you agree, disagree. What are your thoughts?
No, I think we live in an analytical world now. I think you have to be conscious of that. I do think, you know, what you see with your eyes is as important as what you see.
Agreed.
On the vest. But yeah, we've had vests for, you know, my 4.5 years I was at Hampton. So we had them a little bit beyond, you know, most had them, and we've had them the whole time at Billericay. So I am, in terms of a analytical point of view, I am, you know, really. And you know I've had Mark around me
for
15 years, and he is, you know, as a conditioning coach, the best you'll find, as much as the best
physio therapist
you'll find. So he is very with them as well. But I do also say there's another side to the, you know, the game that we get away from. I still think, you know, having the right, you know, mentality within your group is important. If your mentality's right and they're prepared to work hard, the analytical stuff falls in place anyway. So get the players on board that have got the right mindset, and then the stats talk for themselves.
Speak for themselves. You know? I like. So that's your gem. Get the players on board that have
mentality, got the right mentality. The stats take care of themselves.
I love that. What a great gem. Yeah. Whoa, amazing. We have to wrap it up there, and it's a shame because I was really enjoying it. I feel like there's so much more that we could have got into. So who knows? There could be a part two.
Anytime. I'll definitely
look forward to it. Gary McCann, it's been a pleasure.
Yep. One league.
Enjoyed every minute of it.
One league.
No, you can say one league.
One league.
No, he makes it better. He always wants to see if it's going to be said or not. So we got this running thing where he says one league, I say one league, and then sometimes the last guest says it, sometimes not.
If he'd give me eye contact, he couldn't wait to get the Harry Bows, you know? He was like,
he's looking at the sweets, yeah? No, that was amazing. I